Welcome to Attention Confidential, the podcast where we explore deep self-awareness, bold curiosity, and passionate advocacy for both ourselves and our communities.
In support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find triggering. Topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note, this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. And because transparency is one of my core values, I should also share that I am using software that includes enhanced features to simplify the editing and post-production process. Any editing of this content, however, this original, organic, human-generated content, is done so at my discretion, specifically to optimize sound quality, not to manipulate, omit, or alter any substantive material in the recordings. All guests have a chance to review the material before it is published so they can be assured that their voices and stories are held and shared with care, treated as sacred things to preserve and pass on. You can find more details about each guest and relevant resources in the show notes for each episode.
The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast. Hey, weirdos and queerdos, and welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential. I am your host, Maggie Green, and I'm here to remind you that your voice matters and your stories are safe here. In case you missed it, all guests on the show have the option to remain anonymous if that is something that helps make them feel safe. For this first season, the Tragic Optimist Tour, featured guests have all chosen to entrust me with some of their most intimate personal details, which I consider a generous gift both to me and to you as listeners. For that, I am incredibly grateful. Speaking of gratitude, I am super excited to share that today's guest has also chosen to disclose their identity. Before I tell you who they are, here are a few things to know. This person uses he, him pronouns. He's a former athlete with a passion for all things culinary arts and hospitality management. He grew up in Central Kentucky, where we met almost 20 years ago now, and currently serves as the restaurant manager at a nationally renowned ski resort in the Rocky Mountains of Montana. His name is Chad. Chad, I am super happy to have you on the show. Thank you for being here. Would you like to take a few moments and introduce yourself before we get started here?
Yeah, my name is Chad. I've lived in Montana for the past 10 years. I was born and raised in Frankfort, Kentucky. What got me out here was my passion for skiing and the hospitality industry. And I've been out here since, like I said, 2016, and I think this is my home away from home.
I love that expression, your home away from home. When I think of home, Frankfort is one of those places. I'm curious, like, what it is about Montana that makes you feel like home, like Frankfort feels.
Well, it's completely different. Back home in Frankfort, I have a huge, huge support system, men's family, social outings and regular things. Out here in Montana, I have a few friends, of course, but where I work in seasonal hospitality, I see a lot of people come and go. So that was a huge transition, and for not having the constant circle of friends and all that kind of stuff. But I do have a few near and dear people that I hang out with. It's definitely different in the social aspect, and I'm able to take those times that I would normally be doing social things back home in Kentucky. I find myself in the summertime, golfing, hiking, cooking at home, going out and doing karaoke every now and then, skiing in the winter. And I'm right next to a very cool national park. I get to hang out with a bunch of grizzly bears and see a lot of geysers and stuff. It's kind of cool.
It's amazing. Yeah, Montana is beautiful. The listeners, if you've not ever been there, I had not until April of this year. Had the opportunity to visit with Chad in person in a different location. So we met in Frankfort, Kentucky, and got to reunite in Montana, which was amazing. You mentioned karaoke, Chad. I know we're going to get into that a little bit later. Spoiler, folks listening, more on that later. As I mentioned, we explore three themes in this show, right? The mirror, the magnifying glass, and the megaphone is how those are expressed. For the mirror, we always think about self-awareness, self-reflection. And as you and I were brainstorming topics, one of the things you mentioned was your sexuality.
Well, I do identify as a human being first and sexuality second, but it does make a big impact on who I am and my lifestyle. Growing up in Frankfort, Kentucky, I used to tell people that it was so easy, and it was like I never lost any friends, and it was an easy transition. And I was basically for a while deluding myself. And I look back and think, I mean, man, it was super tough. It was super tough to have to be concealed for so long. And then also growing up at a younger age, not knowing what exactly homosexuality was and why I was different than other boys and, more comfortable around girls, but not attracted to them. It was just a mystery that kind of slowly unfolded itself until about middle school. And then I finally came to terms with it after kind of educating myself in a sense on what, sexuality was. And eventually, it was my junior summer going into my senior year of high school. And I came out to three really close friends of mine. And I can't tell you the relief, the support that they've all, everything was encompassed. There it was a very nice feeling. And then college came around and started to discover my liberal side and really just mainly opened up around then. But there definitely were some challenges along the way.
Immediately, I'm picking up on this idea of a community, a support system. You reference all the connections that you have in Kentucky as you're sharing these initial experiences with figuring out this part about yourself. You have people, it may only be a few, right? You mentioned a few people at first, but the fact that you did have those trusted individuals around you to lean on, to confide in, strikes me as really powerful. Not everyone has that. And I just want to acknowledge that's really amazing. And thank you for sharing that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So growing up in the Bible Belt of the U.S., I didn't exactly have a lot of support from friends or family, really. The two people you want in your corner the most are your mom and your dad. And they never were hateful to me specifically, directly. But growing up, kind of witnessing certain things that they say, or would say about the homosexual population was very disheartening at times. Example, I remember, I don't remember what the show was or what the movie was, but my mom and dad now were downstairs watching TV in the family room. And I just remember, I don't know, I was probably 9 or 10 years old. And two guys were making out, kissing on screen. And mom and dad were both just like, ugh, yuck, that's disgusting. And little did they know that their baby boy in the living room with them was wondering what it was like to kiss that other guy. And, just stuff like that throughout the years, and them being a little bit judgmental and not knowing who I was and where I was going in life was always challenging. And it was difficult to hear things like that, especially when you were still just trying to, at a young age like that, trying to figure out what exactly you are and who and what all this is, It was difficult for many other reasons. My grandparents, like I grew up in the church with them, and they weren't strict, extremely. They weren't like the world's worst people ever. They were actually some of the best. But the aspect lacking was, of course, that would make them even greater. People would be accepting of all, you know. But there was definitely a lot of pressure from that aspect as well, growing up around church, always being involved in church programs and around church people. Eventually, my parents found out about the same time, about 7 or 8 months after I came out in my senior year of high school. And being from a small town, everybody knows everybody, and you go to school with other family members, including my cousins. I am 99% sure that my cousin told her mom, my mom's sister, my aunt, that I was gay. And there was a rumor going around school that I was gay. And basically, I came home one day and my dad was like sitting on his computer desk doing some work. And I sat down on the TV, on the couch to watch some TV. And he asked me, he's like, "You know, there's a rumor going around that you're gay." "Yeah." And he said, "Is it true?" And I said no at first. And then I just awkward silence for about a minute or two. And then I finally said, "Well, actually, it is true." And he was a little upset, not in a hateful way, but he was like, "Are you sure?" And I said, "What do you mean? Am I sure?" And then I said, "Yes, of course. I am attracted to guys, Dad. And I'm sorry." And I didn't know what was going to come next. He was kind of quiet there for a minute, and I was thinking I was speech about, you know, how wrong I was. And it turned out he said, "Well, I guess it does make sense. You never did bring girls around." I said, "No, not like my other two brothers that did." He's like, "Well, we just want you to be safe and happy, and we'll always love you." And, you know, not everybody gets that. I thought that was really, really nice of him to have done that. On the other end, there was a comment, though. He's like, "Would you please go speak to a therapist?" And I said, "Why?" He's like, "Well, we just want to make sure that you're gay." You know, like, I'm like, "Dad, I don't think that's something you go to a therapist for." My dad's a smart man. Like, he's college educated. He's not dumb, but just certain things, he's just, you know, that wasn't his strong suit, I guess. But I agreed to go to the therapist just for their peace of mind. And the therapist was like, "So why are you here?" I said, "My parents told me to come here to tell you that I'm gay." And he goes, "Okay, well, you need to tell your parents there's nothing wrong with you." And that was like probably the first person that, other than my friends, to tell me that you're okay. That was like one of the greatest things ever. It was a pretty cool thing that happened, but I never went back to that therapist, obviously, after I told my dad what the guy said. And I told my dad and my mom, I was like, "Maybe you all need to go to the therapist and just, you know, maybe do some family
Fucking
therapy type
right.
thing." But, you know, it was definitely just one of the many things that I went through. My mom's reaction was a little different. She called me from work crying. She's like, "Are you sure it's true?" I said, "Yeah, it's true." She's like, I said, why are you so upset?" She's like, "Well, I just want to make sure it's not my fault." I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Was it because I'm such a bitch to Dad? Is that why you don't like women?"
Way to
I
make
was
it about
like,
you, Mom.
"Yeah, exactly." So that was kind of a funny thing. But, you know, my brothers and sisters were pretty much okay with it. They have a half brother, half sister, and a full brother, but I consider them all brothers and sisters and, you know, family. And they all had the same reaction, like, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" And I guess that kind of circles us back around why everybody was like shocked. You mentioned I was like a former athlete. Yeah, I was kind of always a jock and never was. And you can attest to this too. I am the worst gay person on the planet as far as fashion, way I talk, all that. I just, you know, I'm not very flamboyant or very noticeably an out there person, I guess.
I mean, look, that's all stereotypes, right? Like,
Yeah.
gay, is not a look, you know? I feel like that's limiting. But I know what you mean as well.
Well, there's reason behind that why I didn't really fit the stereotypes is because I was trying not to be for a while. I guess there's a part I didn't mention too, like when I started to figure things out about my sexual identity and all that kind of stuff. I realized that I was very different, but for a while I didn't want to accept it. I didn't want to be different. I wanted to be like everybody else. I was lucky enough to grow up down in a really cool neighborhood down on the Kentucky River, where there was just about 10 of us that were all the exact same age. We all went to school together. We all grew up playing sports together. And some of them now are like some of my best friends, and some I don't see much anymore. But anyway, trying to fit in with them growing up, they were more interested in playing baseball in the backyard or basketball, football, whatever, any type of like sports you can imagine. And I was more interested in being a cheerleader, I think.
You ever told me that about the cheerleading?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was mostly goofing around, but like I was definitely like I found myself acting like a cheerleader sometimes, and I was just like rooting on the boys. I don't know. It was scary not be able to, feel like you could be exactly yourself, that you needed to fit a mold like like all the other children on the block, in a sense. And that was definitely a challenge. And
It's interesting, something I picked up on as you were sharing is like the implication that something was wrong with you. You had these experiences where the therapist, for example, like total stranger, validates you immediately, says right out the gate, there's nothing wrong with you. You are okay. This is a them problem, right? This is not a problem. The feeling about not belonging or like you had to embody certain traits or whatever to fit in. Like my thought was like, no wonder, right? You've internalized all of this, like from your parents, from extended family, from larger like community social circles. I think of lack of education too. Not that that justifies anything, but like some people don't know. They really don't understand. And also it's not about understanding, it's acceptance, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the Bible Belt, and obviously we have some shared history, the connection to Central Kentucky, those social experiences, cultural experiences. And I think for listeners, it might be interesting to hear you reflect on that a little bit, maybe in contrast with, you said Montana's totally different. So can you give us like a social studies or history like micro lesson on the differences and the similarities between those two times and places in your life?
It's funny that I chose another semi-conservative area to live, and not like a big metropolitan where, like Louisville, Kentucky, or Lexington, they're very large LGBTQ plus areas that are very liberal. The town I live in is actually a college town as well, similar to Lexington, but both areas are I would say like. The small town I grew up in, it was in Kentucky, of course, is Frankfort. Frankfort, for the most part, is pretty liberal, but they're like it's like every other person, like 50%, I would say, it's like every other person in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but then again, you go, 5 miles in either direction in Frankfort, and you're kind of in the sticks, and you're into a lot of, like you said. Unfortunately, there's a lot of uneducated people, and a lot of hate is around those areas. Well, there's some great things that come out of a church. There really are. Let me preface with that. Now I don't, condone everything that, a lot of conservative people obviously, share an opinion about the gay community. There are some good things and good people that, that are around growing up in the Bible Belt. But there's also a lot of backwards thinking that you have to deal with, which is kind of the downfall. Out here in Montana, it's very, I don't bother you, you don't bother me kind of mentality. And I'm also just maybe not as, like I said, I don't have the same social circle that I do back home, and I'm not always out doing social things, and maybe I just don't experience a whole lot of the conservative thoughts out here in this area. Where I am in this part of Montana, it's actually known as Montucky. That might have been the appeal of why I like it out here. A little bit of a history to that. Pretty sure it's just because there was a big bluegrass following back in like the 80s or 90s, and some of that culture just kind of like stood around as well. So some of maybe the Kentucky values are out here too. Like I think maybe some of the better ones in my opinion. But yeah, it's I've not experienced a whole lot of any bigotry or anything like that. I've actually found a few places that to socialize at a couple bars here in town that are LGBTQ friendly. There's not an actual official gay bar anymore. Rightly so. There's the population out here is very small, and to be able to support a business, of course, you have to have people to support your business. And the nearest gay bar that I'm aware of is actually 2 hours east, and I've been to it a couple times, but that is a trek. And so, it's usually like an overnight thing if you want to do something like that. But like I said, I've never really felt uncomfortable out here. It's in this town alone. Another situation, though, is the next town over. It's a smaller town, and I would go get my haircut in this town because it was cheaper, and it wasn't that far of a drive, so it was worth the extra 10 to 15 bucks I've saved to go to a place. Because, as you know me, I don't have a whole lot of hair up on top anyway, so it's kind of hard to mess that up. So I'd rather spend less money at a cheaper place. And it's just funny that I went to two different barbers, and I would go there multiple times, and I just kind of dealt with it and just kind of kept my mouth shut and bit my tongue on a couple of things that I've heard. I was telling this story the other day to a buddy of mine, and I called it barbershop talk. And it's just the banter between the barber and the gentleman sitting around waiting. And like this is like old time barber school. I'm sorry, barber shop type
I'm
shops or whatever.
thinking like locker room talk kind of stuff.
Yeah, they very much similar to that. And
Gotcha.
anyway, this was one of the first years I lived out here. And Elton John actually came and played. And this was, I guess, 2016. And that was a great show. I don't need to tell you that. Elton John's amazing. And then 2 days later, I went to the barber to get my haircut. And the barber, I think he was like ex-military. He was very proud of his sons that were in the military and all that kind of stuff. Just very macho guy, I guess you could say. And anyway, one of his buddies came in. I was in the barber chair, and he came to sit down in the waiting chair. They just started talking, and his buddy was like, "Hey, did you see where Elton John came and played in town last night?" And the guy was like, "Yeah, I heard he came in and put on a good show." And they just kept talking, and for no reason, the barber was like, he had to add in, "I don't care what he is." And I looked up to him and I just said, "A human being?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Yeah, he's a human being, man. That's somebody's son. He has a family. He is a human. He has feelings and emotions." Like, and I never speak up, but I just felt compelled. I think actually I know what it was. It was the day after. I think I was a little hungover, so maybe I had a little liquid courage. But I'd never been so proud of myself. And he kind of backed. It was towards the end of the haircut, he kind of, ate his own words there for a second, and he's like, "Oh, probably that'd be $25." I'm like, "Yeah, I'll see you later. Probably not." That's the one time where I just felt, compelled to, stand up for myself and for my fellow people. But I felt really good about myself about that.
Good for
Yeah.
you.
And then after that, for a while, I was like, "Yeah, I'm not going to that town anymore." But then I broke down again and went to another barbershop. That I was like, "Well, surely to God, I'm not gonna run into the same type of conservatism at another barbershop." And every time I go in there was just like there would be just every now and then somebody would throw out some type of slander towards the homosexual population. And it was the barber typically or whoever was waiting. And this I had at that point, I was next and stuff. I was like, "Well, I waited this long." And then out of nowhere, the guy's like, "Yeah, man, I used to." This guy's probably he's probably pushing 70, and he drives Harley Davidson. He goes to the big motorcycle rally out in Sturgis. Anyway, he decided while he was cutting my hair and doing the straight razor to my neck or whatever, he's like, "Yeah, man, back in the 80s, we used to deal with a lot of blood, and we had to watch out for that HIV and all that kind of stuff." I was like, and I just told him, I said, I kind of got out of my chair a little bit and turned my head and looked at him. I was like, "Buddy, that's not how HIV works. And I would just, prefer you just not talk to me for the rest of this, deal, and, just get my hair cut and let me get out of here." And he's like, "I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean," I didn't mean to upset you. I'm like, "Well, it sounds like you need to take some more science classes." That's like I said, the next town over. And they were actually, I think, they were voted most patriotic city in the nation per capita. It's like a town of like 10,000, and it's an itty bitty town,
Oh, that
but
says a
it's
lot right there. I would love to hear some of your reflections on, I mean, a couple of things come to mind when I think about like social cultural experience. I think of food and I also think of dating. I'm curious if there's anything you might feel safe sharing around either of those two topics as we're thinking again about comparing and contrasting Bible Belt area and the Rocky Mountains of Montana.
right. So back home in Kentucky, I would go to bars to try to meet people. I would use dating sites. I would be at social gatherings where I'd feel comfortable talking to other gay men and that kind of things. I think it's mostly because of like my social net was there, and I felt comfortable enough to where I could, really be, because I was usually around people that were like-minded, and that was great and wonderful. Dating for me has never really been a big part of my life. I've actually, not until this last couple of years, I am trying to date more, and I'm trying to find something substantial and, serious. And I just turned 41, and I'm just kind of tired of the chase. And I would rather have I'd rather have somebody to tie the knot with, or settle down with at least for a while and try that out. But out here in Montana, it has been not a problem, but I mentioned earlier that, there's not a whole lot of like areas or gay bars and stuff like that, but there are places, but it's just, there's nothing really known that this is the gay community. There's not a big gay community presence. So the bars are just like anywhere else. And I'm getting older enough too. I'm like, well, I just don't like going to bars that much anymore either. So what do you do? And so the only thing I do now is I just try my luck on the dating sites. I've met some people here and there, but nothing serious has ever really come out of that.
Anybody go up from that neighboring town that shan't be named on the show?
Yeah, they're actually like the radius goes to, out to, however far, and
Right.
you know exactly when there's somebody is 13 miles away, that's the front little shanty town, as you can say. I met a few here and there, but I said, it's, I guess the conservativeness out here too is very difficult for other people, and there's a lot of DL, which, if that means, of course, on the down low, or they're not out, and I'm like, gosh, I'm like, it's 2025. I came out, in 2002 and 2003, in a small conservative Bible Belt area. And it's like, we're in a, I think, a better area out here, to be honest with you, to be yourself. And I'm like, why can't you do this? And I called a couple people out on it and stuff. And I thought about it. I was like, that's probably not the best policy or practice, not the nicest thing to do to somebody, but I was trying to be encouraging to them and say, hey, gay is okay. It's like, you got to realize that I've been out since I was 18 years old, and from a place that was where it wasn't okay. And you're my age, and it's almost, 20 years later, and you get mad at these people for a short period, but at the same time, it's their journey. Everybody has their path that they have to wind around, and I don't know what they're going through, of course. That's a big frustrating thing to me out here, is the, and I think that's it seems to be kind of a complaint, in general, around, not my area, but everyone's area. And the question brings up, why is there so much of this DL stuff still?
First thing that comes to mind is safety. There's like physical safety, there's emotional safety, all kinds of levels of each of those experiences. You said it, right? You never know where anyone is at. I'm sure there are countless reasons for coming out or not coming out. Yeah, maybe the best we can do is just accept that and show up for them when we have capacity to do that and try not to judge, right?
And that's it's easy to it's people say, oh, I'm not judgmental. Yes, you are. At some point, some way, some form, fashion, I think every human is inherently judgmental at some point, but it is your best interest, for anybody out there. I just say just try to be kind, and just try to love one another, because we're here for a very short time and life's incredible. I've had an incredible life. I've traveled, met a lot of cool people. I've seen a lot of cool things and concerts, whatever. But along the way, you just have to remind ourselves that being kind is the best policy, in my opinion. And anybody that knows me, that's all I try to exude is kindness. But yes, I'm guilty of being judgmental. I shame myself for that. But at the same time, I think everybody does it. Whether or not they like to admit it or not,
Yeah, it's
interesting.
interesting, the just the idea of judgment, like what's happening inside of our brains, what causes that as a an initial reaction or eventual reaction. Like our brains, the human brain is always trying to make sense of shit, right? It's always trying to categorize things and recognize patterns and like put things into groups, things being people, objects, experiences, all that, right? Like emotions, all of those things. And when we're faced with something perhaps that is new or unfamiliar or different from our own experience, I think you're right. There is that initial, maybe it is judgment, what someone might consider judgment. And it's like this weird way of trying to wrap our heads around things, which can be limiting, right? We are limited by our experience, our skills, our resources, but kindness, you mentioned that it's something that everyone is capable of. I think everyone needs it. And as I'm thinking about that, the megaphone segment where we lean into advocacy, we take a stance on something, get on the metaphorical soapbox. I'm thinking about kindness for ourselves, right? I think it's easy to be judgmental, critical of others, even when we're having that internal experience. I don't know if you would agree with that, but when I think about kindness to yourself, like taking care of yourself, these experiences that you've had throughout your life, what are the two top two things that bring you the most joy? I think you mentioned both of them at some point in our conversation today. I'd love to hear more about those things.
Cooking is definitely my zen. I can get lost in, I just usually just cook for me. Just my roommate and I. And I will say that whenever I cook, I usually go all out. I don't like to cut corners. I usually have a big spread for whatever we're doing. It's kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you. But again, it's just a time for, I'll spend 3 hours in the kitchen prepping before I actually start cooking.
Is this a
It's
good time
just
to tell people that I have extensive personal experience with this, but also like on the road trip, I mentioned we got to visit with each other. Like Chad is not kidding. He had a menu planned out for this one meal, right? Like well in advance, like a curated whole thing ready for when I walked in the door, which was talk about kind, generous, but also just brilliantly skilled as well. I mean, everything was amazing.
looking back, I do remember the menu and stuff. I was like, this is just for me and one person, but whatever, it's a person I care about. And she's been on the road for a while, so I'm gonna make it the best roadside stop she's had was on the whole trip. So that was my goal. And hopefully I met those or exceeded those goals.
Listen, I'm still thinking about that gumbo to this day.
Yeah, gumbo is one of my favorite things in the world to eat. Two of my best friends, their mom is from New Orleans area, and their dad's from Carancro, which is like down in the southwest area, like near Lafayette, Louisiana. It's like more of the country, like it's Cajun country. Growing up through middle school and high school, I was always at their house, and there would always be something any night of the week. There'd be etouffee, there'd be jambalaya, there'd be dirty rice, there'd be gumbos, there'd be all kinds of stuff that just like from that. Some of my big influences of why I was a chef, I was just saying, was my two of my best friends' parents, and my mom and her side of the family, and my grandparents. They were restaurateur and hotel operators in Frankfort, Kentucky, back in so I was always around good food, and also had a couple moms down the street that I was looking back. Everybody else was wanting to go play football or baseball, but I was more interested in helping out in the kitchen to a certain few. I was, always had a knack and interest for the culinary arts and stuff. So, yeah,
Definitely
that's
cooking. What is the other thing that,
are you talking about karaoke?
well, we mentioned it earlier. How can we talk to each other on
Well,
a record like this without talking about karaoke? How
that's
many
pretty.
times have we done karaoke together?
I think that's how we met, was actually at a karaoke night at the Dragon, or we met at the wine bar in Frankfurt, and then we decided to go do karaoke, but we didn't really hang out before that. But long story short,
Yep.
yeah, I think we were there. Like, we do the schedule of the entire week of, it was always Tuesday at the Brick, and it was always Wednesday at the Dragon or whatever, and it was Thursday at the place across town that you and I used to go to. I forget what it was called, actually. Shoot.
Parlays.
Parlay Social, yes. I don't know. I honestly don't know what it is about karaoke that makes me love it so much. I was always, like I said, I grew up around music. I was in the band, I was in male choir. I was always in some type of like music ensemble throughout my childhood all the way through high school. And my dad was a big music lover. He was a drum major. He also played trumpet and cornet. My mom enjoyed country music, which I'm not that's not my favorite, but I mean, I was always around people that appreciated music. And I was in a couple like garage bands that we were terrible, but it was fun. And I guess karaoke was like, I didn't really have any other outlets to express myself musically. And I just would find myself at karaoke bars. And I'll be honest, when you met me, I was actually not very good at karaoke. I had taken a break from music, I guess, and just kind of lost my footing and how to stay on beat and rhythm and stuff. And it was really weird. Like, I always have like a decent voice, but eventually I just kept going and going and going, and I got back into the groove of singing and singing on rhythm. Or in rhythm or whatever. Like I said, I don't know what it is about karaoke that I like so much. It's not the attention. Most people are like, "Oh, you just like attention." I'm like, no, I just like singing, and I like people singing along with me. And I don't know. I don't care what the song's about. I think Dave Grohl said it best. He was like, "I have a repertoire of songs that we sing live, and I know what that means to me." But it can mean a thousand different things to a thousand different people. I thought that was kind of like a cool thing. Some people just like to be drunk and have a good time. I mean, it's a good outlet. It's a good way to, release some stress if you've had a long week at work. Or it's fun, and you don't have to be good at it, and you can be okay at it. You can be a little too tipsy and be okay at it.
It's for everyone, you know?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny too to see that when you go to karaoke bars or karaoke nights, you see the same, like, there's always new people that come in like every night, but then there's a core that's there that they share the same thing and same. It's some kind of like almost like a cult following, but they're always there. I swear, like you go there and there's the same people, and you don't even know them that well. You're not buddies, but you talk to each other and like you socialize, but that's the only place you probably see these people is at this karaoke, like at the karaoke bar for the most, or karaoke night, whatever.
That we got to mention the word cult, and it wasn't directly tied to the Bible Belt. Like, I don't know. I'm not surprised that it came up, but I'm surprised that it came up in the context of karaoke. That is amazing.
Well, I mean, it's just, and those people are like hardcore. Like they're there every single week, every night. And I don't know. We need t-shirts, like nationally and world known. Like, we're karaoke singers, deal with it. Or it's a karaoke thing. If you know, you know. Like, I know you asked me about it, and I've been thinking about this was actually the one topic that I was gonna say, like, I don't know why I like karaoke so much, or I don't know why I do it. I just do it. And I love music, and it's cool to be able to put your own twist on things, I guess.
I think it's really cool that you identified that the attention part is not what turns you on about it, right? Because there are a lot of people who would have that perception, which, I mean, who cares what anyone else thinks, right? Like, I don't know if it's true for you, but certainly from my perspective, karaoke, the way I describe it to people, it absolutely is stress relief. It is like an emotional outlet. I often have really big feelings, and part of processing those feelings sometimes, like karaoke, is part of that toolkit. I can access feelings, process, and work through emotions while doing that activity that I can't do when I'm just like sitting down trying to figure shit out. Like, it's a, like it's uninhibited in some ways. Like, it's a place where I have a different level of confidence than I do in other places of my life. Like, just to kind of like let loose, I guess, like no filter, no, which is ironic, right? You're on a stage and there's a light and a microphone, but it's like not performance for me. It feels like, I don't know, like connecting with parts of myself that I don't get to explore or show very often, in other spaces of my life. Is any of that relatable to you?
No, for sure. I've always considered myself a misfit toy, and I think it's an area where I feel, for some reason, comfortable being a misfit toy. And I think these people that are like, it's because like, I think my karaoke family's there. I think we're all a bunch of misfit toys sometimes, and I mean that in the best way possible. But
Interesting.
I think misfit toys are, just some of the best people on the planet, because we're different, we're unique, we have different, definitely, I'm not saying special, but like, I mean, we definitely find our comforts and joys and other things that are different to a majority of people, I guess. And I think karaoke is definitely that. Like you said, stress reliever, just gets your mind off things that, you're not thinking about anything else. You're just thinking about that moment and just singing that song and having a good time, and whether or not you're making an ass out of yourself or not, who cares? It's karaoke.
It's important to make time to goof off and be silly and like play, I think, too. And that's definitely, karaoke provides that for me, or can, so you mentioned misfit toys, which I absolutely love. I think as we're wrapping up here, I always like to ask about kind of actionable things. Like, if we have listeners who are, as you say, misfit toys, or the weirdos of the world who might be in conservative areas or around conservative people, anyone that today's conversation might resonate with, what advice do you have for them, or tips that they can kind of take away and put into practice as they're thinking about some of the things that we covered today?
I don't know. If you find yourself in a conservative area, first and foremost, make sure you're around people that love and care about you and that support you. And if you're not, and you just feel like you are just in this place that just feels so dangerous, or feels so, just to be able to express yourself and be remotely who you are, get out. Do what you can. Move out. I mean, take a leap of faith or whatever, and find your path. And if it sounds, maybe your path is not where you are right now, And you need to lead yourself out. But I was fortunate enough to be in a conservative area in both places where I was around friends and loved ones and had a support system and all that kind of stuff. And where I grew up was not that bad. But, and I know a lot of people have it a lot worse in even smaller, more conservative towns. But just surround yourself with people that love you. And that's really all I can give. And if you're not around people that love and support you, maybe it's time to think about making some major decisions and getting out of your comfort zone a little bit, because it sounds like you wouldn't be comfortable anyway. And just find that path out of there is what I would do. But like I said, I wasn't really ever trapped or felt like I couldn't be myself, but that was just all because of the environment that I was around and the people that I was around loved me.
I appreciate that, and I think it will touch a lot of folks. It may trigger some folks as well. There may be people out there who are terrified of leaving. They don't know any other alternative. But I love that you reference the leap of faith, right? Creating your own path. I would add to that, surrounding yourself with people who love you. Maybe that's not possible in your current physical environment, but it is absolutely possible. I've touched on it in other episodes. This notion of community can be built through internet connections. That is possible. You can find people with shared interests, shared values that can help you build that support network. As far as like cooking specifically and karaoke specifically, I was thinking there might be people out there who have always wanted to learn or have always wanted to try either or both of those things. Chad, you've shared, right? Like it takes practice, it's a learning process. I'm curious if you have any advice for tips for folks who want to explore the culinary arts or cooking for themselves as self-care or try karaoke for the first time. What would you tell them?
As far as cooking goes, anybody can do it. And don't start with, incredibly complex dishes that require a lot of different types of cooking styles. A dish doesn't have to be good because it has 1,000 different ingredients in it. A dish is good because you cared about what you were doing, and it's good because it's good. And that just means cooking with love, essentially. Start cooking something that you've just really been craving for a while. If it's something as simple as spaghetti and meatballs or spaghetti and meat sauce, I do that all the time. And it's not intricate. It's not by any means challenging at this point for me, but for people that are just learning, some another good advice I can give people is it's a French term that there's no direct English translation, but the phrase is called mise en place. And that basically means everything at the ready. That's the best way you can translate that word. So basically what I'm saying, be prepared, have a plan. Exactly. You nailed it. Always prep all the ingredients that you could possibly need. I have everything pre-measured. Don't do it as you go. Don't let anybody tell you that doing it as you go is the best way to do it. No, have everything kind of set off to the side. If you have counter space, designate one area for, like say your dry ingredients, then your produce ingredients, and all the chops that you got to do. Keep your meat separate because we want everybody to be safe, and that includes in the kitchen. But basically, just have everything at the ready before you start even turning on that stove. Get it all prepared. That's the word I want. You want to make sure that everything is prepped and ready to go before you do any type of cooking. And then for me, I don't know. I like to have the TV on in the background a little bit, throw on some music, anything that can kind of like get you in a rhythm. Finding your rhythm in the kitchen is also kind of cool. A lot of places of work feel like they, won't let you have a radio on or listen to earbuds or whatever, just because it's, safety policy. But when you're at home, just have fun. And like I said, throw some music on, throw a movie on in the back, just have some background noise. And like I said, you find your rhythm, find your zen, and you find yourself having fun. And eventually you're like, wow, I did all this. And then you're like, oh crap, now I got to clean this all up. That's the worst part. And if you know me as well, I use probably more dishes than the average chef does. And I can dirty up a kitchen pretty quick. So I don't really know how to mitigate that myself on my level, but for anybody out there listening, just try to be neat and tidy as you go as well too. That always helps the process, because you don't want to sit there and go through this whole process and then have this negative feeling afterwards, like, oh my God, now I got to clean up.
Staying organized
So
helps.
staying organized definitely helps for sure. As far as karaoke, tequila?
Okay, so what about for the
No.
sober folks out there? What about for the sober folks out there who might want to explore karaoke as an outlet?
It can be nerve-wracking for sure for the first couple times. Advice to karaoke people, sober or not sober, just get up there and find a song that's not too complicated or technical and just belt it out. And typically, like the people at karaoke night, they aren't expecting, like I mentioned Elton John earlier, like I get up there and I sing Elton John songs. Am I expecting them to think that I am Elton John? No. I'm expecting them to think that I am Chad and that they don't know that, they don't know my levels of singing or whatever. And they're not expecting an $80 ticket show. They're expecting karaoke night at the local bar on Main Street.
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com. That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential, but of course, the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories. If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this, your voice matters.